This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. The U.S. House voted yesterday to bar Syrian refugees from entering the country without first passing strict background checks. The measure passed with affirmative votes from every Republican in the House and 47 Democratic representatives. The political maneuver comes a week after coordinated bombings and shootings in Paris that left more than 150 people dead. ISIL claims responsibility for the terrorist attacks. 31 governors, including North Carolina's Pat McCrory, announced their intention to keep Syrian refugees from resettling in their states. North Carolina lawmakers and Democratic gubernatorial hopeful Roy Cooper joined the chorus, calling for a pause in admitting Syrian refugees. Political junkie Ken Rudin joins me now, as he often does on Fridays. Welcome back, Ken.
Hello, Frank. Let me just say one thing, that actually there were two Republicans in the House who voted against the bill. One of them was Walter Jones of North Carolina. But of the 289 yes votes, only two Republicans voted no.
All right. Thank you for that correction. Very important. Overall, what does this vote in the House mean?
Well, as you say, I mean, it's a veto-proof majority. It's obviously it's not what President Obama wanted to hear. He tried to talk. He tried to reason. He tried to make his case to lawmakers, saying that we are a tolerant country, we are a compassionate country, and reacting like this is not the way to go. But look, if you look at the polls, there's a majority of the American people who are afraid. They're watching. They're alarmed. They're watching the spread of violence going from the Middle East to the center of Paris. And, you know, you don't have to have a very long memory to remember 9/11. And so there's a lot of fear. So the question is, so certainly the votes are there in the House. As I say, 47 Democrats voted yes, which is much more than the president wanted. Now the attention goes to the Senate. The good news for the Democrats who oppose this bill is that the Thanksgiving recess is here. There's like 10 days or so before the Senate will reconvene, and perhaps it'll give the Democrats some time to either go home and talk to constituents and see how the folks back home are feeling, or allow President Obama to come up with another strategy.
Obviously, refugees now have to go through some security checks
and background checks.
What's the difference, and is the House specific, is the legislation specify how stringent these checks must be?
Well, right now, the way I understand it, it still takes anywhere between 18 to 24 months to allow these refugees. And, of course, President Obama has talked about allowing 10,000 in over the next 2 years. If you listen to the Democratic debate, both Martin O'Malley and Hillary Clinton talked about 65,000. But anyway, what this bill would do is it actually would have the head of the FBI and the head of Homeland Security to actually individually vet these Syrian refugees coming into the country and have their approval before they can come in.
What about the Senate? How will this do in the Senate?
Well, Harry Reid says it's not going to pass, and of course Harry Reid wants to say that because he's opposed to it. But again, you know, given the public mood, the public fear, we don't know. Again, we may not have a vote in the Senate for another 2 weeks. If the vote were today, I would suggest that the Senate would overwhelmingly pass it as well. But it gives some Democrats in the White House some time with this Thanksgiving break to perhaps temper that mood a little bit.
All right. Here in North Carolina, Governor McCrory joined 30 other governors, all but one a Republican. All but one were Republicans, and saying refugees shouldn't be permitted. And the front runner for Democrats in the race against him, Roy Cooper, didn't disagree. He's with McCrory on this. Tell us about that.
Isn't that something? I mean, is it politics? Well, he's in a neck and neck battle with McCrory for the election next year. The one Democratic governor you mentioned is Maggie Hassan of New Hampshire, who's also in a neck and neck battle for the Senate. She's running for the Senate in New Hampshire next year, and she's opposed to it too. So you don't know if it's politics. You don't know if it's people back home saying we have to have a pause. But you know, people. I mean, I said this over and over again, but people are frightened. People are alarmed, and right. Although at the same time, you know, if you look at the Democratic vote in the House, I mean, overwhelmingly, and of course, all the Democrats in the North Carolina legislation, all three of them anyway, say that, you know, this is more of a vote about fear and not practicality, and compassion should take over. So the country is split, and it's usually by party.
Well, and again, just on pure political grounds, just as a purely political question, there's really not much to lose by supporting increased background checks, right? I mean, that's just you're talking about national security, and there really isn't a Syrian refugee vote that you have to worry about. And I'm just talking about pure politics.
Putting in political terms, you're exactly right. I mean, the fact is that when the news reports came that one of the people alleged terrorist in the Paris attack had a forged Syrian document with him, a passport, or was part of the migration of Syrian emigres to Western Europe. When people saw that, they said, wait a second, how do you allow 10,000 Syrians into this country when this is going on? So, again, there's a lot of misinformation. There's a lot of uncertainty. I don't know if it's jingoism, as you see so much on social media, but I think it's a fear that and I'm not going to be the one who says it's illegitimate fear. Right. I mean, there's a lot of concern, and people are afraid that, you know, the U.S. could be next.
On purely moral grounds, however, we have had this discussion in the past. If you take us back to the late 1930s when the U.S. severely restricted Jewish emigres who wanted to come to this country as refugees fleeing Nazi terrorism. They were turned back in the tens of thousands and, of course, many slaughtered. We had this discussion then, and we did this then. And there were many fears. I mean, brute anti-Semitism was part of it. Also fears that there was a disproportionate number of communism among those Jews. In any event, we did it back in the 30s, and we appear to do it now. And again, it was at a fearful, difficult, anxious time in our history.
There's a big battle. That's a very good point. You mentioned both points. Yes, there was widespread anti-Semitism, just like when Irish the Irish were trying to flee from the famine. The United States turned back so many people from Ireland because of anti-Irish sentiment. There was certainly anti-Semitism, widespread anti-Semitism, 1938, 1939. But as you say, they also said, a lot of people said, well, maybe they're fifth columnists. Maybe they're really communists who are coming to the U.S. to foment, you know, some kind of a communist revolution. So it was ideology then, but I just think there was some, I think there's just a genuine fear today. You know, Jews were not blowing themselves up in 1938. They were not taking people down, you know, bombing neighborhoods and communities and things like that. And I think the fear is, there are some comparisons that work, some don't, but the comparisons are certainly part of the conversation.
You know, I am thinking, though, with Thanksgiving coming up, I suppose we as those descendants of Europeans in this country have to be thankful that Native Americans didn't have the anti-refugee policy, because we wouldn't be here. I'm just saying, it's Thanksgiving, just a thought, a holiday thought to plant in your mind. Hey, speaking of holiday thoughts,
speaking of Thanksgiving, I mean, did you hear what Donald Trump is calling for? Mandatory registration of Muslims.
Yeah, all Muslims, citizens.
Right, America, exactly. Now, if that doesn't sound like 1938, 1939, I don't know what does.
He is still a leading candidate in the Republican presidential campaign.
The leading Republican candidate, and the guy who's closest on his heels is Ben Carson, who said the other day that, I mean, he said that the concern over allowing Syrian refugees into the U.S. is like a parent concerned that a dog approaching their children may have rabies. So basically, it would have sounded like to me that he was equating Syrian refugees with rabid dogs. And I mean, I don't know if I'm putting words in his mouth, but there are so many things that candidates are saying that, I mean, yes, I understand the fear. Yes, I understand the apprehension. But some of the rhetoric from leading presidential candidates just goes beyond the pale.
Paris attacks also prompted a renewal in the debate over surveillance and privacy. We're afraid once again, and as the chairman of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, North Carolina's Richard Burr is right in the middle of that debate. What's happening?
Isn't that something? I mean, look how quickly that the public opinion switches on that issue. After 9/11, we wanted to, you know, wiretap everybody. And then when we got the revelations from Edward Snowden about how the U.S. was spying on its own citizens, then Rand Paul was starting to move up in the polls, and everybody was saying this is just, you know, unacceptable U.S. policy. And now with, you know, talking about the Syrian attackers or the terrorists who did this, the Belgians who did this, are using some kind of encryption, and therefore we need more and more surveillance. And then the argument that Richard Burr And to some extent, Dianne Feinstein, the ranking Democrat on intelligence, you know, they've been NSA supporters from the beginning. Now the momentum seems to be shifting their way. It's just remarkable how it goes back and forth like this.
Well, of course, we worry about what the sworn enemies of the United States are doing and how they're spying on us and what we should know. But our allies also spy on us. Israel was spying on us by way of Jonathan Pollard, who spied for Israel and was released from prison. Butner, North Carolina. He's been there for, well, I don't know if he's been there all 30 years, but he was released from there after serving a 30-year sentence. And this is actually a hot political topic, right, Ken?
Oh, my goodness, absolutely. From the beginning, from many administrations, both on Israel's side, on the U.S. side, Israel has pleaded with the U.S. to release Jonathan Pollard, and the majority feeling, the overwhelming majority feeling in the State Department is that whether he spied for Israel or Russia or anyway, he spied against the United States and stole secrets. He is not somebody who should be rewarded with freedom, and yet I don't know if this was a conversation with Obama and Netanyahu, as many suspect, but the fact is that, as you say, after 30 years, he was released from prison, and now the only debate is whether he can go to Israel, where his wife is living. The State Department says no, and he may stay in the U.S., but again, that has been a hot potato for decades. You're absolutely right.
I've only got about 30 seconds left, but just to be clear, he was up for parole and received parole through the prison system, and the question was, would the president stop it? And the president didn't stop it, right?
Exactly. The administration had the right to stop it. It did not.
All right. Ken Rudin, political junkie, as always, Ken, a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Frank.
Ken Rudin is the political junkie, and you can link to more of his good stuff at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, Black and Latino coalitions in the Deep South find new political power. We'll talk about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned.